Welcome to today's episode of Fire in the Belly. This is where we get to hear some pretty inspiring stories from some amazing people. You know, it's always an absolute pleasure to sit down, take time out, and have a warts and all conversation about their journey. I'm always intrigued by what it's taken for people to get to where they are today. And hopefully, in this interview, we get to hear some more about that. From this, my mission is to help people to find their own fire in their belly, and from that, to live the mightiest version of you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's guest. Success is a process, not an event. Hello, and welcome to Fire in the Belly. Today we have myself, Mighty Pete, and we're joined by the Sandy Joy Weston. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening to you.
Wait a minute. I was just thinking, is it afternoon or morning here? Wait, it's early evening. And good evening to you, Mighty Pete. Love the name.
Listen, it's great. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure. So to give our listeners a bit of a background, so Sandy Joy Weston, MED, is a keynote speaker, international podcaster of for many, many years. Wonderful. Three times published author and entrepreneur who has owned and operated health and wellness companies over 30 years. Early in her career, she became the first female trainer for the Philadelphia Flyers and has spent many years as a media personality and as Philadelphia's NBC 10's fitness expert. She created the nationally recognized Philly Street Line Dance. I'm going to have to ask you about that because I don't know what that is, to help combat Philly's fattest city label. For the past 5 years, Sandy has been focused on SJW Productions, an international company whose main mission is to highlight all the positive in the world. Wow. She does this through her international podcasts, her books, Train Your Head and Your Body Will Follow, My 30-Day Reset Journal, and her programs and workshops. Sandy's mission is to spread pure joy and inspire others to see their true power. Sandy, wow, what an introduction. I love it. Thank you. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
I don't remember the last time somebody read that. I was like, wow, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's good. It's like, wow, my work here is done. I shall leave. So tell us, I'm gonna throw you straight in the deep end here. You know what you're doing here. So what is your fire in your belly, Sandy? What's it all about?
It changes, but the overall theme is whenever I tune out all the negative chatter from people on the outside and also what's going on in my head and just tune in to my higher power, my inner voice, I'm unstoppable. No matter what people say, no matter what people tell me, now how many naysayers there are, when I feel that and it's coming from love, I just keep going until it happens, no matter how many times it, I don't want to say fails, but doesn't work out that time. I just keep going. I was just asked that recently, like, what does it mean for you to have success? And it's not whether it worked out or not, is that I put myself out there. And I can tell when I do that. And when I go against the grain, I swear, Pete, my whole body like shakes. Like, I'm not following me. I have this thing I say. And what I was saying, I actually said out loud on a stage right before I spoke. I didn't know it. I'm like, come on. You do you, Weston. You do you. And I tell myself that whenever I feel like I'm not following what I want to do and I let the negative chatter affect me.
How often do you tend to find you get in sync? Is it a time of day? Is it a place? Is it a something you find yourself in regularly? Talk to us about that. That sort of, you know, that place of coming from love, that just purity.
Well, I believe our pure essence is love, peace, and joy. That's our pure essence. And when we tune in and really just even take a beat to listen to ourselves, it's going to come from love, peace, and joy. And I start first thing in the morning before my feet hit that floor, even if it's only 30 seconds. I do this every day. How do I want to show up in the world? One word. I'm not a complicated person and I don't like things that are time consuming, but I just say, okay, We want to show up in the world today. And if I'm having a really high day, then it might be pure joy, powerful, fun, motivational, inspirational. But let's just say it's one of my off days. Then I'll say, I want calm, ease and flow and peace. So I start out in the morning that way. And then I write in my journal and I base everything off that word. So if the word was pure joy, I look at what I'm doing, whether it's a podcast, speaking engagement, even sending an email, talking to a friend. I say, am I coming from pure joy? Am I coming from freedom? And if not, I take a moment and I reset myself, whether it's just rolling my shoulders back and breathing, opening up the door, take a fresh air, or doing a dance reset. So it's not long, but I just take that minute to pause and I just say, I just take a beat and I reset.
Well, what's your litmus test here? How do you know if you're coming from your pure essence? How do you know if it's right?
Ooh, you know, Pete, because how do you feel? If it feels good to you, unless you know you're a rare human being, and there's a few out there, when it feels good to you, it's coming from peace, love, and joy. It's no option. It's going to come from the love-based versus fear-based, or you feel off. Now, I guess the bigger question is you may not know when you're there if you don't take time just to breathe and listen to yourself. You know, and close out, like we talked about, all the negative chatter, whether it's the outside voices, the inside voices, the news, the social media. So you have to just even take a minute. And when you do, if you're feeling anything good, it's coming from the love-based. If it's fear-based, you'll know that it's coming from guilt, anger, anxious, nothing wrong with it, because we all go there and we all feel it, but you can tell, and there's nothing wrong with it. Just ask yourself, do I really want to take action from that place? And I would say it's not worth banging out that email, doing the voicemail, you know, making sure you get your points in the meeting if that's where you're coming from. Because even, I'm not saying you're wishy-washy, because you can come from power and still be from love.
Do you trust your feelings? They as good as you got?
Ooh, that's a good one. I've been working on it for many years. So I do trust my feelings. I do. But I've taken time to understand and listen and know. And I can, like I said, I can tell my whole body will shake if I'm not doing something that I really want to do, you know, not for somebody else. Like I can feel it, but it's over time. I've developed it. And if it's coming from me just being fear-based and scared, I may not know it instantly, but I'll know it quickly because I've trained myself to do that. But that's a really good question because you're right. Not many people. There may be people that don't even know.
And for you, I mean, it sounds like it's very kinesthetic. You feel it. It's within you. It's there. It's, you know, is that, I mean, you know, some people see it, some people feel it, some people smell it, taste it, touch it, whatever, right?
Yeah, but like, I've been doing this since I'm a kid. You know, I've been developing and working and tuning in since as long as I can remember. So when people say, I don't know, I'm not sure how I feel, like I get that because it's not going to happen instantly if that's not something you worked on, you know, if that's not something that you cared about. There are many people that just say, this is how I think, can't change it. This is how I feel, can't change it. And just recently, I changed my whole keynote. I took this course and I came up with my big idea. And my big idea, it fits me perfectly. And it says, life doesn't happen to you. You happen to life. And that's how I believe. Like there's crazy stuff going on out there. And there's going to be times in your life, you know, that are struggles. We all have severe pain, suffering, anxious, overwhelmed, maybe depressed. But my thing is, to how do you shift out of it quicker, not get stuck there, so that you can have more of the life you want to live. And for me, I think it's the little things you do every day to remind yourself of how you want to show up in the world. And then throughout the day, like every hour, just check in. Where are you? And if you're not where you choose to be, then ask yourself, what can I do to get there? You know, what can I, it might, like I said, it might be just taking a walk, getting something to eat, petting your dog, playing with the cat. It doesn't have to be that complicated, but it is little things over time that you do to train your head.
Mm. Is life happening to you or for you?
I feel that I'm probably one of the, this is how I feel. I feel like I'm the luckiest person on earth most days. That doesn't mean if you looked at my life, it's picture perfect, because it totally is not.
Well, but, compared to what, right?
Well, I mean, like, it's not like, oh, great, you know, just, it's life is perfect, because no one's it. But I do believe things always work out for me. And I do believe when I look back at different things, there's a reason they happened in that way to unfold things for my behalf. I mean, believe me, I have talks with the universe about, hey, you know, maybe we don't need to have so much of that. I could get the lessons quicker or see it quicker. Or we still haven't figured that one out. Like, I got it. I got it. I'm good to go. But I do have that innate belief system in me. So when you believe that, I believe I'm a powerful creator and I believe that things are always working out for me, it gets me back there quicker when things go off rail.
And for you to get back there, I mean, is it a chat with yourself? You talked about the we, you know, we ask ourselves, you know, what's your intention? What are we doing? What's going on, right?
Well, I definitely have a strong belief system in a higher power. And it's not like I'm per se religious doctrine, but I do believe in a universal force that's coming from peace, love, and joy that connects us all and that we all have the ability to tap into. Can I tell you a fun story why I believe that?
Please do.
Okay. And this is, by the way, something I didn't talk about, believe it or not, until the last year. So backing up a little bit, because of my success and my attitude in life, people, even my close friends, just assumed I came from a wealthy family, very supportive, and very filled with love. And they just assumed that. And most people didn't even really ask me any questions. But in my most recent book, I was short a certain amount of words. And I was like, okay, now it's time to tell a little bit of your story. And then from that, it gave me courage to put some of those stories in my keynote. And it's just because I wasn't ready to talk about how I grew up, because I wanted to be able to come from strength and power. And I believe whatever stories you tell over and over again, they really affect you. So if you're going to tell the same story over and over again, you better look at it with, wow, I'm on the other side of it. And I can tell it with joy, or that I'm benefiting as well as other people. So ever since I can remember, I believed I had five angels watching after me. I mean, I was a little kid and people would say to me, are you okay? You know about your family. I'm like, I don't know why you're worried about me. I got five angels and they look after me. It's not a lot, but they laugh. And they'd say, okay. But I grew up in the projects, which was tough enough. But my mom, she battled many, many mental health issues. So she spent about 50% of her life in mental institutions. And not well-funded ones. And that's why we got actually thrown into the projects, because of all her medical bills. Where I grew up, it was always people worried, like, if I was going to not just come out being mentally stable, but also graduate high school. And in my head, even though there was nothing wrong with it, you know, I had a lot of friends that I grew up with that had my back in the projects, that wasn't their path, but I had this innate feeling that there was something more that I was supposed to do. And I would use three different things. I had no idea that it was going to make a career and a livelihood of it every day to get my head in that positive space to dream big of whatever I was going after. I would use words, even as a kid, focus in a word. Things got really rough. I would journal, write, scribble, scrabble, either to get stuff out or to dream big. I would use movement. I brought my uncle since the age of 4. He paid for my dance lessons, so I would move. And laughter. I always see things lighthearted. And those three things I did every day. I would move around, think of a word, tell myself jokes, make light of everything, and then really visualize where I wanted to go. From passing a test, getting in the cheerleading squad, graduating high school, going to college, and I would see beyond what was right in front of me. So when I tell people about what I do now, I say, I've been doing it since a kid. So I've had a lot of in the most severe situation, you know, which trained me for everyday life. And that's why I feel like the luckiest person in the world, because from where I came to where I am now, it's just like, to me, incredible, just incredible. Like I have a yard, I have a family, I have a dog. It's just amazing, you know.
Is it that level of contrast that gives you that appreciation, do you think, that level of joy? Or
I think that is part of it. You know, because I appreciate every, like, I get excited, you know, if it's fly day, like I celebrate every little thing, like any holiday, any celebration, I celebrate the little things. I celebrate the big things. I celebrate my small victories, you know, and I have that gratitude of something I guess you couldn't have unless you came from that severe of a setting. You know, I think some people do, but I do think that's part of why, who I am.
What would happen if you didn't celebrate that?
Didn't celebrate the little things? You mean didn't celebrate?
I just didn't celebrate or take time for that.
I can't even imagine that. I can't even imagine that. Because I do feel true gratitude, not like just, I'm grateful for my home, I'm grateful for, you know what I mean? Like that, if you really feel it, it does shift your mindset into highlighting all the positive stuff out there in the world. So there's a difference between not feeling, because I do, angry, sad, you know, mad, whatever. I mean, I express it. The only difference is I let it go through me quicker and I sit with it and I'm okay with that I feel this way. And it moves through my body quicker so that we talked about I can spend more time in joy, in love and peace. And I think when you do celebrate all the little things, you really do focus more on all the positive in the world. So a lot of people say, oh, Sandy, you don't know how the real world works. You know, you're living through rose-colored glasses. I know how the real world works. I just choose to focus on all the good stuff out there. I choose to highlight the people making a positive difference. I choose to highlight any little thing that I can find to celebrate what's going on in the world and then build on that. But it doesn't mean I'm not aware of the other stuff. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. And I suppose it's perspective, right? It's a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
you choose how your day is going to be. You choose how to receive certain news. You choose how to review your opportunities, right?
Yeah. And there's some days you might say, yeah, I can't do it. That's a lot. And that's okay. That's okay. I have this piece that I just created in my speech, and people always look at me like, huh? I go, you know, you do get to decide. You get to choose how you're going to show up in the world. Like you are in control of that. And I think many people, that's tough for them to accept, because it's easier to accept they're not in control. Then they don't have to look at where they are, you know? And to me, if someone's really wanting to have self-growth, develop, experience a really amazing full life, they have to be willing to accept that, hey, I'm in charge here and I can make a choice no matter what my life looks like. And if I choose this, it's okay. So it doesn't make me a bad person, but it's a choice. That's what I said. Maybe other people look at my life and be like, yeah, I don't know if you were so lucky. For me, it's the path that had to be.
And that's the thing. It's sort of, you know, I suppose it's that expression, you know, from your darkest hour comes your brightest moments. And sometimes if it is a case of going, listen, there's no negotiation here. I'm not repeating, or I'm not allowing to continue what has happened in your past. You know, that's going to change, right? You're saying that's the choice. It's not even a choice. It's an absolute commitment. This is my new being. This is my new who I am, right?
Yeah. And you know, mine was the opposite. In order for me to survive, I actually blocked out a lot of memories. I couldn't remember things, right? But also, I didn't allow myself to be angry or upset because I knew better. Like, they did the best they can. They had issues. They had this. That's why they did this. That's what they, you know. And that's great. That's okay. That's fine. You can understand, okay, there was a lot of mental illness there and poverty, and that's why things were the way they were. But that doesn't mean you weren't sad or angry, you know, or upset. And it wasn't until recently, even like the last 5 years, that I actually allowed myself to feel that, the other side of it. And that's why I say now pure joy, because in order to experience, you know, not fake, like I can get up there and maybe we'll celebrate and fake it and not really believe it, but to really show up with that pure joy, you have to know the other side of it too, you know, and be willing to feel the other side of it. And so I had that, which was really hard for me to allow myself to feel that pain. Oof, I didn't like it at all. That was yucky.
Isn't it funny? You almost have to reclaim the dark side, you know, to be complete. It's all well and good saying, yeah, no, it's all sunshine and roses. Just don't speak to me at 9 o'clock on a Friday night, because I'll be a, you know, bag of tears and halfway down a bottle of wine, right? That's the bit I don't want to talk about. But as you say, it's leaning into that and saying, there's energy trapped there, good, bad, and different. There's just energy trapped, and that has to come out if you want to be whole.
Yeah, you do. I went kicking and screaming though. I, thank God, had a great friend coach. I wanted to kill him at the time, but he walked me through it. I think it was, 2019, June, I went to a workshop in Colorado, and I just sold my health clubs. I did not know about COVID, but perfect timing It was great. And he's like, the guy said to me, so what do you want to do next, you know, in your business? And like, what would you like to feel? And I said, pure joy and freedom. He's like, yeah, I think you're going to get that. I said, okay. Well, a couple of days later, I fly home and I was hit with such a severe injury in my neck and head that I couldn't move for like 6 months. I'm a big mountain biker, huge mountain biker. And I fell one too many times, ignored it, until the nerves in my neck were just cutting off all the blood supply, and they would go up into my head that I was, I couldn't move. And they didn't know what it was this time, right? They're doing CAT scan MRIs, blah, blah, blah. Here I am, somebody that works out, you know, hours a day, mountain biking, you know, making sure I move constantly, doing speaking engagements, all this stuff. And I'm in a fetal position on the side of myself, couldn't even do a podcast, couldn't type, didn't want to eat, force myself to eat, couldn't watch it. That's how much pain I was in. And cut off from the world. Most people didn't know. They thought I was touring, right? Here I am. And I call my coach and he says, oh my God, I'm so happy for you. I go, excuse me? He's like, you asked for pure joy and freedom. Well, now you're going to get it. The universe couldn't give it to you any other way. You can't help others. You can't keep moving. Can you find pure joy in spite of all that? And what happened is all this anger, all this frustration, all the sadness, it came out of my body. Because now everyone's going to think it's just the physical, but this is happening to you for this to happen. And as soon as my body, I mean, there was a lot stored of this, like released it all. Then the answers came and what it was, and the right physical therapist came, and I start going back to working out and being able to move. But it wasn't like for a year that I could get back on my bike and left.
Isn't it funny? That's...
Isn't that crazy?
You're not going to slow down and stop. We will. Something else. Yeah, be careful what you wish for, right?
I mean, everyone thought it was just a physical, but he's like, Sandy, it's more than that. I mean, your body has it all stored and it has to come out. And it just, it allowed for me to grieve and get it all out. Not all, but a lot. I had catching up to do.
So it is so beautiful, so powerful, you know, but actually to give yourself that, because it's probably the hardest work. It's the most important, but yet the hardest work is, you know, it's easy to go on another training course. It's easy to try something new, do something else, right? But it's until you sort of look back inside.
Yeah, it was, I don't like not being joyful. I mean, it was, you know how everybody has their stick, you know, somebody might be the martyr, somebody might be, they're known to be sad, you know, victim, whatever. My thing is, I create joy. And all my friends call me, and if Sandy's going to come up with it, call Sandy. You call her if you want her to spin it and come up with a solution. So even if I was a little sad, it was like, no. Like, you're not that in the group. Like, you just can't be that. So after that, some of my friends went on the wayside, but other amazing ones came in, and I could be fully me. You know, not always coming from pure joy, you know, that I was allowed to feel with my friend. Now, I had created that and I understand because it worked for a long time. And that's how I got to where I was. And that was my persona. And I am joyful a lot of my life, but I want to be able to be sad, you know what I mean? Cry now and then. And my friend's like, okay, not like, no, you can't be that way. That would be weird. That would be a robot.
Talk to us then about, you know, your book here, you know, Train Your Head and Your Body Will Follow. What's that about? Is that an extension of what we're talking about here? Is you gotta work through what your head is either thinking about or not thinking about, as the case may be, you know, and the body is essentially a slave to the head.
I believe it. It's all connected, body, mind, and spirit. You can't really separate it out. It all works together, whether it's coming from your head, whether you're coming from your body, spirit. Some is more powerful than the other at times, but it's all one. And the reason I wrote that book is because my staff begged me, because I always have a story, a parable, life lesson. They're like, you really should write a book, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not a writer, you know, so it was like, wait a minute. I journal, but then it ended up being like I speak. And I went on this quest. I said, okay, what do I want to write about? is there something that I could do for people to get them more in that positive, powerful headset? Something like people that weren't, didn't already have a practice. So that book took me years to write. I mean, it's very simple, very easy, and it's got journals in the back with it, Pete, but it took me years because I did so much research. The first year, I was able to take 100 of my members, all walks of life, CEOs, CFOs, moms, dads, professional athletes, everyday people, and I bribed them. And I said, if I can interview you for a year, for a few hours here and there, I want to see what makes you tick and what it is that you do, because all of them, I felt worthy of being happy in life and exuded joy. So I interviewed them and for a year, and I'd ask them all these questions, what they did, the routine, and I really couldn't find a pattern. Besides, they all felt they deserved to be happy in life. I'm like, well, I can't really just say you deserve your birthright to be happy in life. Yeah. But what is the technique and tool? And then finally, my colleague came up with it. And she's like, Sandy, look, it's here. Every single one of them, look what they do. Every single one of them had a morning routine, whether it was a few minutes or a few hours, that they did before they entered the world. Every single one of them. So yes, some of them meditated and worked out and journaled, but others baked muffins, played jazz music, you know, pet their dog, made lists, organized themselves. They did something and they believe it mattered how they showed up in the world. So I was like, okay, that's huge. We can work with that. So then I took another year and I met with the powers to be, I call them. And I was fortunate enough to gather a lot of them because my health club was right down in Center City, Philadelphia, and I had a big conference room. And I brought together from all the universities down there, positive psychologists, neuropsychologists, exercise physiologists, sports medicine guy, nutritionist, fitness guy, guru. And we tried to come up with something, a guide, a journal that would only take a few minutes every day to get you in that headset. And that's what we did with their help coming up with. I said I wanted to be like from a sports angle because I wanted to reach the everyday person who's not somebody that would go into a yoga class, you know, and seek self-growth. So we came up with the game plan, the acronym, the power statement, the word. And I took another year and I gave it to people. I said, it'll take you 5 minutes a day. Took it out to people that I thought were highly motivated. They were members of my gym. And I said, pick the area of your life that you want to up level or is your sticky wicket. So if body health is working for you, don't pick that. Pick love relationships or money career. Pick one of those areas and work on it for 30 days. See what they did. Well, a year later, it failed. One person did it. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. They didn't even do it for 30 days for 5 minutes to see if it would work and get them in this headset. So I go back to my professors and they're like, well, of course it didn't work. No one's going to take 5 minutes a day to do something they don't already believe is going to work. I'm like, why the freak didn't you tell me? And they're like, well, you didn't ask. And we thought you had to find out for yourself. I was so mad. So then we changed it up and created something that would only take 1 to 3 minutes by, you know, doing just slashes and this and that. And that succeeded. So that's what the book is based on. There are little stories about all my mentors I've met along the way and people I looked up to, but it's really to get people even to spend that 1 to 3 minutes a day to focus their head in a positive, powerful way. And then go out to the world.
Isn't it mad that, I mean, just even as you say, that simple little thing, it doesn't, you know, we're not talking half a day, we're not talking 2 hours, you know, it's just that thing to spend time with yourself, you know, before the phone.
It's like, for example, if you wake up in the morning and you're like, okay, it's not time consuming. I would love for you to think about it for 30 seconds before you get out of bed, But you just spent a minute in the morning just reflecting on what you put down that is your game plan, what you want to accomplish. And you just reflect, whether it's personal, like we said, it doesn't matter. And I truly believe pick one area to focus in on, because if you pick them all, they don't work out. But if you focus in on business and focus in on your body, if it's your relationship, the other ones will come along. Do you know what I mean? But pick just one area. It just tunes you in to what you decided you want your day to look like. And then you might work out for 30 minutes to 40 minutes or an hour, and then you might meditate longer. So it's not that that's all the 1 to 3 minutes, but it's that you do that every day consistently. You know, of course, you'll have off days you won't write it down. I say then think about it in the shower, because I didn't want it to be something you wouldn't do. And over time, it just becomes a way to life that you just go, wait a minute. And you start tuning in more, and you start tuning in more, and your goals change, you know, your words change, but it's a reminder, you know, and it's something you'll do no matter what. But when you do this, the workouts are going to be different you chose, because if you want it to be fun, you're going to find workouts that are fun. You know, if you wanted to reach the right me and the action that you're willing to take, you're going to say, oh yeah, I said I was going to go out at least once a week. So it's simple, but it's just little bits over time to have a huge impact. And that's how I've lived my whole life. Those little things to have, I truly believe that, you know, to reach what you want.
What did your time in the business and the gym industry and you know, the fitness industry, what did that teach you about all this?
Well, number one, even though you love fitness, you better love business, you know, because it's a business. And I never thought I was going to be an entrepreneur, but it fell into my lap because of the timing, and I was training people and they're willing to back me and they believed in me. But what I realized is I loved business. I loved the whole thing about it. I loved the ups and downs. I loved the challenges. I loved the hurdles. I loved managing people. And then fitness was my passion. You know, I used fitness as a vehicle to spread joy. And since I love people, my clubs, I got to see, like, you know, 1,000 people a day. It was great. You know, and anytime, and I taught classes. So anytime I could be in front of people and spread joy, it was just incredible. You know, that being said, you know, it's not every single day was amazing, because you're also behind the scenes running business. And there's times, like, you know, you're not making money and you feel like you're plugging one hole and the money's coming in, it's going out. So there are those challenges behind the scene, but you're in a different type of business. No, you have to have the right personality, because you could be sitting there looking at a spreadsheet and your profit and loss statement. You're like, oh my God, I'm in the red. Or how am I going to make rent? And then you have to go out there and those people are coming in and you have, they can't know that. You have to spread joy, be happy, and be really upbeat. So it takes a certain personality to be able to do both ends of it. And that's what I like the most.
Mm. Isn't it funny? Exactly that. I mean, the entrepreneur, you know, you have to be, which also makes entrepreneurship quite lonely, right? You know, because you got to protect your team from that. You know, they've got to know that everything's sunshine and roses, or else it just spreads like wildfire.
Yeah. And I brought in my business partner. David had been with me since he was 19 years old. He started as a trainer, then a fitness director, then a manager, and had been with me till he was 35. And I made him my business partner, which is the greatest thing I ever did. Because it allowed me to have more freedom to do the marketing and create more of the joy. And he was more behind the scenes stuff. And I also had more time for my family. So I knew that's a balance I wanted once I was able to create that for me. And somebody I trust, he had been with me for so many years and he knew my value system. So that was a great thing to have, to be like, sit there, you know, and do both ends of it. Not that I wasn't aware of it, but I didn't have to be sitting there all day long looking at the numbers.
Well, what are you great at and what are you terrible at?
I'm really good at shifting energy quickly. So I, like I said, I could be in and some be like this so amazingly, like not great stuff, and then walk out the door and go, showtime, and care so much about the other people that I genuinely am happy because I get to be in front of them and spread joy, even though chaos is going on in my life or was going on in the business. What I'm not good at, well, I think I could be a little bit more discerning with people and not just start everyone up here. And that doesn't mean that I don't think the world of them, but I think I could be a little bit more, take them a little bit more time getting to know them versus just trusting them immediately with absolutely everything. Not a good idea. Because I in business, I mean, I would choose that versus not because it still has worked for me, but I still think there's a way you can still have faith in people, but not just blindly trust everything they say until you get to know them.
Would you find yourself, are you quite intuitive? Do you tend to pick up on energy quite quickly or?
I pick up on energy with people if they're happy, if they're sad, if they're faking, you know, like, that they're scared, like in the body language, the face and the hands. But as far as business goes and financial, no, I'm a little too trusting on that end. I've gotten a little better. And I have my husband who's a lawyer to counterbalance me, so that's good. But you know, he's not that much different than me either.
It's good too, right? Because I mean, listen, we all have our strengths. We all have our thing, and we don't need to necessarily to know everything. I mean, you know, you hire accountants for a reason. You hire lawyers for a reason. It's like, I know enough to be dangerous. And then after that, I bring in the person that I pay, right? Or, you know, that's the thing. So there's a happy medium.
I always said, I'm not good at a lot of things. I'm good at this. And that's what I'm good at. And I would drive some people crazy. Well, don't you want to learn that? No, I'm good. I'm not, I used to think, oh my God, if I was that smart, like if I used to say, if I had those people's brains, what I would do with it. And then I stopped them like, no, I don't want their brains because then maybe I would get distracted. Like I know what I do well, and this is what I do well. That's it.
What are you really proud of in your life?
I love that about myself. I can sit with a person that everyone tells me they're evil, whatever, but I can just see the light in them and pull it out. And I love that. So I love that I meet people everywhere I go and I have the most in-depth conversations quickly. Just my son always says to me, Mom, don't even say hi. Just go in and say, coffee, please, because if you just say hi, it's going to start a whole thing. I said, I didn't even say, how are you doing? All I said was, no, don't say hi. Just say iced latte. But I do like that the most.
I think that's a bit of a superpower to connect to people and get people to talk to you.
I think they feel that I'm genuinely interested in what they have to say. I'm really listening to them, like with not waiting for when I can talk. I mean, I can talk a lot and I can keep talking and I can talk to a tree. But as much as I love that, I love listening to people and hearing their journeys and about them. And I think they can, that's why when I just say hi, they know I'm really listening to them and I just want to listen to them and hear what they have to tell me about whatever. With no, not everyone has judgment, but hopefully with not a lot of judgment. and just listen to them, just to hear what they have to say.
What do you learn from that? What's the lesson there from listening to somebody?
Oh my gosh. It's so fun. I find people fascinating. I find their journeys fascinating. I find their choices fascinating. I feel like I, every day, connect with at least one human being that I learn something from and makes me want to be a better human being. Whether it's the person at the grocery store, the coffee house, the Amazon, it doesn't matter. Or a podcast host. I feel as if I find something so innately beautiful within them and then I grow from it. You know, even I heard somebody say, you know, the best lessons they ever got was the woman that handed them the paper towels when you go to the ladies' room. And I never forgot that. I heard, I don't know who said that, somebody famous. And it struck me like, oh, I don't think I ever spoke to them. Not like I want to hang out in the ladies' room, but you never know. And so I try to remember that. Even though now today, I was in a rush, so I have to admit, I did not like my behavior, but it's okay. A storm hit, so it held me back from, I was at the storm, like, oh, I'm going to be late for my podcast. So I didn't stop and talk that much, but most days I try to have a cushion in there. I go to the store.
Mm. Do you think as a nation or as a society, I mean, are we just not listening to each other anymore? Are we just... people aren't getting a chance to talk as much, do you think?
I was thinking about this because I had a few people on my podcast that people thought I shouldn't have given a platform. But I wanted to hear what they had to say. And my rule is, if they're coming for me, hate, I won't have them on. But if I feel like it's coming from love-based or their truth, I want to hear what they have to say and why. Unfortunately, I feel as if we all have too many labels on us. I feel like there's like stickums all over us, stickums with what we are. And we shut down and assume we know what they're going to say and who they are and what they're about. And we already jumped to conclusion. So we're not really listening to them, you know, because that's who they are. Even just not just even looks, but once they say, oh, I'm this, that, this, that, you automatically, and that's it. And that on top of we're all, and I get it, more anxious because of everything going on in the world. And it would be impossible not to be. Like I said, yeah, no matter what, you know, you decide how you're going to show up in life, but there's times when it's more difficult. I have to gear up a lot more, a lot of days, you know, because I can feel the anxiousness and people being unsettled. So with that, you even are less tolerant of people that aren't like you. And unwilling to even possibly think you have something to learn from them. And I see that even with the most loving people. Okay, so this is something that just happened to me recently. At this huge family gathering, and some people from the other side of the family had relatives up from the South. And they saw me and they're like, Sandy, we're here. Because, you know, they were sitting just with their own group. It was like 100 people for fireworks and they didn't know any, right? So they're sitting there and they couldn't wait for me to tell them stories. Now, this other person said to me, now keep in mind, he was a little drunk. Why would you sit with those rednecks? And I go, what are you talking about? He's like, why would you sit with those rednecks? I'm like, you mean the people from the South? I go, because I think they're fun and I like them and I enjoy their company. And we were having a good old time, you know, about their travels. So then I came back to the table and the guy heard the person say that to me. He's like, "Do you think I'm a redneck?" I go, "Well, what's a redneck? Because I know there's a lot of different definitions." And he said, "Well, I am a redneck." I go, "Oh, you are?" And I said, "Okay, what's a redneck?" And he said, to him, a redneck was somebody from the South that speaks their mind. That was it. That was his, "We don't take anything. We tell you like it is." I go, "All right, well, then I'm hanging with the rednecks." But do you see what I mean? Like, he goes, "What do you think they think a redneck is?" I go, "Well, we don't want to get into that. And they're kind of drunk because they only have to walk home. So we might want to avoid them. But everyone has a different interpretation." I go, "But that's how you believe." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I'm a good old boy," meaning I grew up in the South. I like Southern cooking and I like hanging out with my family. And I, speak my mind and I don't take anything. I said, "Okay." And I thought that pretty much sums it up, right? I mean, even what he in his mind thought of a redneck, and it was something to be proud of and happy, with, versus whatever the other people were thinking just because they were from the South and had a very strong accent. And then he went into saying that it took him a long time in business. He didn't finish high school. He wasn't taken seriously. He thought maybe because he had a very, very strong Southern accent, but now he's a top manager in this huge company traveling all over, and says, "Now look at this redneck now," and that was just a valuable lesson. And that's what I mean. Like, I'm going to tune out all that negative chatter of people mad at me because I'm talking to, like, what does that mean? So that was a fun time.
Where do you sit in terms of nature versus nurture? Are people born joyful, free, clear human beings, or are they born redneck? Are they born, with these things hanging over them? What do you think?
I think it's a combination. I think we all come in the world with a different set of skills. I truly believe I had no other choice but to be joyful. It was innately in me, where somebody else might be a little more skeptical, where somebody else might be a little more negative. But that being said, the environment, I really truly believe, is so, so important. And it does take a lot to come out of an environment that is filled with hate and poverty and overcome that. It can be, but man, it's a lot easier if you come from a loving, nurturing family in a wonderful community, or even just one person who loves you unconditionally and supports you. So even if you're coming from poverty, but you have that one person that's your stability that you know you can come back to, can make a huge difference. I remember I was a new mom and, I didn't have some role model. So I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this? And I was sitting on a train with somebody that was, I forget her name, but she was the top psychiatrist and world renowned, speaking at the University of Pennsylvania for how to raise children, especially infants. And I saw her looking at her speech and her books, and I'm sitting next to her on the train. She's coming from New York City. And I go, "I don't mean to bother you, but I could really use some help as a new mom." And I was ready for it. I thought, I had my paper out, I was ready to take all these notes down. And she's like, you know, Sandy, people think, pick the baby up when crying, don't pick the baby up when crying. Keep him in your room most long, don't keep him in this room. Spank them, don't spank their bottom. Walk by this age, all these things. And she said the number one thing, and this is why I remember this, is that child has one person that loves them and supports them unconditionally. And they know they can come back around, and that's their safety net. That's more important than all the other stuff. I thought, okay, then I didn't screw up so bad. Woohoo! I was so excited.
It is, isn't it? It's more important to bring that sort of safe environment, you know, and I'm always intrigued, and it sort of follows on from what you were saying earlier, and the book, Neil Donald Walsh and Conversation with God, and he's sort of saying even Hitler's getting into heaven.
I believe you can't. See, I have a different philosophy, and it really works out well for me. You cycle in, you cycle out. And I think while you're in a spiritual form, you've picked the family to come into for whatever reasons. So since I innately believe that, I'm like, yeah, me and God are working out a different plan next time. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm cool. This worked out for me in the long run, but let's not repeat that one. I'm going to take the happy, pippy, skippy family. So I believe that's why how when people say, oh, it's so unfair, it's not fair. I think we keep cycling in and cycling out. So you'll get a different life.
Have you been here before, do you think?
Oh, my God. I must have been here a lot.
I just think
I'm an old soul. I really do. I think I must be a really old soul. Like, I think I can eat, because how did I come into that belief system where I am and end up where I am now? I mean, yeah, you know, I'm joyful, but come on, you know. I just told this story recently, and it still bogs my mind. So up until the age of 8 years old, I grew up in a little house, half a double, nice little town, right? Little yard, everything kind of cozy. Mom, still a wackadoo. And Dad, still, you know, just feeling like he has to do anything for her, that, you know, he was a true, like, she'll be fine, is going to turn around. But because he probably wasn't paying the rent to the landlord, and my mom would scream a lot and keep the landlord up because it was a half double, it got to the point where one day me and my brother, probably skipping home from school, and there was a padlock on our house. We had been evicted. And, you know, said, you have 24 hours, get your stuff out. And there's all our stuff, like everything piled up in a garage. And we had 24 hours to get everything out. And I looked, this is me. Now, I'm like, I think I'm eight and a half. I look at my brother and go, can't believe they waited so long. I mean, seriously, it's bound to happen. He's like, wow. He was a year and a half older than me. That was my personality, you know, like, and then it did get rough, but that's how I saw things. And from there, of course, there were times, you know, you're like, whoa, I don't know if I can laugh this off. But what makes a child have that attitude? Unless they cycled in and cycled out a bunch. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, like I said, I feel like the luckiest kid ever, because I still knew in the sight of that, like, all right, well, that was going to happen. You know, here we go. We have nothing. And that's how we ended up in the project. So it's got to be. Got to be something bigger out there.
It is that thing, isn't it? You know, it's, I don't know, two people, same scenario, same events, and yet two completely different aspects. You know, someone
saying, was probably the more normal. Yeah. Like, we're screwed here. Yeah, right?
But where do we see you at your best? Is it when you're under pressure, when it's chips are down and mentally all the stuff is on the driveway and it's grab it and go?
Yeah.
You know what?
Can I use that? Grab and go.
What is pressure for diamonds, or is it just bad planning?
No, you know what? I think when I'm at my best is when I have this vision of the next thing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be chips are down, chips are high, does not matter. But when I have this vision, like I'm going to open a training company, I'm going to get my master's, I'm going to open health club, come heck or high water, I'm doing it no matter how long it takes me. Like once I decide to write the book, it took 6 years to get a big publisher. You know what I mean? Like I'm at my best when I tap in, like I said, innately to something big I want to accomplish. And no matter how many people are telling me it's one in a million, oh, I go, I know this is going to be great and it's going to really bring me joy and others. That's when I'm at my best. It could be easy. I mean, there's things I've done like that that have been easy. And there's things that took longer and more difficult. You know, it's just there's no stopping me when I feel like that. I get, it's like something's in me and I just keep going no matter what.
There's something, and I find that, you know, talking to enough entrepreneurs, successful people, passionate people, et cetera, it's kind of when the chips are down or whenever they're in their flow state, that's their purest form. They're like, I haven't time to think about it. I haven't time to slow down. I'm just, you know, and that's why I love a long interview because people can only hide for so long.
Ooh. You know, ooh, I like that.
You know, and I've seen it. It takes, you know, the first I say to guests before and after, it's like the first 30, 40 minutes, people can tell you what they've always said. This is my standard script, right? This is the other questions I ask and I'm used to it. But then we slip into a mid-conscious level. And that mid-level consciousness, you literally will see people sit back and they'll sigh and they'll go, this is okay. This is comfortable. I'm happy with this. This is good fun, you know? You know, and then you slip into another layer of consciousness, which to me is typically around the sort of the 1 hour mark. And it's where people, I find it's only my perception, it's around there where people start to think and speak at the same speed. So you get very genuine thought.
That is awesome. I never thought about that. I mean, I know once you're with someone long, but I never thought about that, you know, but you're probably right. Yeah, that's a good one.
I've never been able to do it under 2 hours. You know, because people say to me, it's like, was it the best podcast is, or the podcast, the average length of the podcast, 26 minutes. And I'm like, oh.
You're right. And it's, but that's just, you know what, that's different. Like I think there's a place for all of it. For those, I think they're more like, this is what the person does. Let's raise awareness. And here's 3 takeaways that you can research. And that's different than someone's journey. You know, because I've done, you just gave me some good information. My speaking engagements are usually 60 minutes to 90 minutes for my keynotes. And most people are trying to get it to 30. And I think, and I do a lot of stuff that's interactive. I never thought about it like that. That's what worked for me, but you're probably right. I can't get into that groove and get them to trust me and relax before that time.
Yeah. It's just, you know, the people who say for me to do it under an hour, because my editing team, the whole lot are going, do it under an hour. It's like, I don't want to.
See, you're tuning out the negative chatter.
Yeah, it's like, you know, was it Tim Ferriss, any of these guys? And they're like, they're 3 hours plus. It's like, be thankful I'm not doing it 3 hours. <It's> like, that's the only thing I'm going to say. Is like, so if I clock in at 90 minutes, give me a break, you know? You know? But there's something about, you know, people's deep genius. There is something about our flow states. And it's like, I don't think we get there. I don't think we get to listen to, you know, and my own book, I mean, part of it was saying, you know, sometimes people just need a damn good listening to, you know, and one of my editors was like, that sounds a bit close to, you know, this sort of double connotations there, you know, it's like, but it's true. I think sometimes people need to get into flow state. I think people need to be listened to. I think people need a chance to just, you know, just to talk it out. You know, it might be nonsense or it might be pure gold, right? But if you don't let it out.
Yeah. That's true. And I think about it at times, even when I was writing my book, there were times when it felt forced. Oh my God, just go in the room, like they say, for, you know, write for an hour, no matter what comes out. But then there's other times that I'd stay up to 4 a.m. just because it was coming out of me. I wasn't tired in it. I mean, I might've been a little, but it was just like, I was so excited about what I was putting on the pages that I didn't have that same exhaustion as when I like had to force myself to write for an hour or two. Whole different feeling.
When is your flow state? Is there a certain time? Is there a certain place?
10 p.m. I like the way I knew that right away. And my son, who's 19, he's the same way. My husband's like, oh God, I'm getting tired. It's like 10 p.m.
10 p.m. started.
Yeah, and that's when I would come up with my business ideas. That's when I create. I mean, I'm not saying I don't do things throughout the day, just slug around, but 10 p.m., my eyes are open. I start writing things, start writing down, blah, blah, blah. That's my time. I know. A lot of people say, I was just listening to an inspirational podcast. My husband's like, what are you listening to when you work out? I go, oh, you don't want to hear it. He's like, what is it? Because he supports me, but he makes fun of me because I'm so geeky. And it's like those inspirational, motivational speeches, you know, fall forward. You can't die. And it's very preachy. And they were talking about this one about 4 a.m. Like, yeah, in order to succeed, you have to get up at 4 a.m. I'm like, heck no, that's not me, but I'll stay up. You know? So they're like, you're probably going to bed at 4 a.m. Some people, but they might be thinking, you know, staying, nothing wrong with it. I've been out drinking, but I do know there's a majority of people that are early birds. And I used to think, oh my God, I have to force myself to get up in the morning because if I don't, I won't be successful. But that's not true. But I did have to get up early when I was first opening all my health clubs because they had to open 5:30 in the morning. Ugh. But anyhow, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there is something. I get having those extra hours, but I feel like I get those extra hours at night. So I'm sure I could change my clock.
Mm. Is there a little touch of ADHD in there?
I don't know. Okay, so here's something you want to know about me. I don't like the letters. I say PhD, HGH, ADHD.
That's dyslexia.
ADD, I don't know. Don't box me in.
It's not a bad thing, right? Because I think super creative people, you know, and I agree. There's
I know.
We're all on a sliding scale of some goddamn.
I don't know because I don't know enough about it, but I can tell you this. I'm a body in motion stays in motion, body at rest stays at rest. I can totally chill and relax and not move and meditate. When I'm even in front of one person, I'm excited. I get hyped. I'm so I'm a true extrovert. Like the COVID thing really was not good for me. The virtual thing, I was out on my bike waving to neighbors, hi, just to get some kind of people. Where my son and my husband are extreme introverts. My son goes, Mom, we've trained for this our whole life. We're good. You know, like they were like getting energy and I'm like, oh. So I do know that as much as people say, oh, you can never sit still. They don't even like it. Cause once I sit, I'm like, no, you're on your own. I'm done. I'm chilled. So.
Isn't it funny? You know, it's, listen, that's the thing. We celebrate who we are and you know, what we are. That's great. It's just like God, we're all different. Like, cause it really would be a weird world if we're all the same.
You don't want people to be the same. Oh, that would be weird.
What does the future hold for Sandy then? What's out there for you?
I think we talked about it a little bit. I just finished a course, Heroic Public Speaking course, which was amazing. It was a 7-month course to take your speaking engagements up to the next level. So for me, it was keynotes. Some people was presentations, workshops, whatever. I did a lot of keynotes prior to COVID, but mostly with well-being and fitness, and always very upbeat. Like, you're going to bring me in to get the party started. I wanted to do something with that, but also a little deeper, which I, for the first time ever, added some small stories in a lighthearted way, but just so people could see where I came from in my keynote. So it's a totally different keynote. It takes you on an emotional journey. My goal is to get out there and travel with my keynote. Like, I want to do bigger opportunities. I did before. I used to pick 4 by myself, 4 to make sure my son could go, and 4 to make sure my husband could go. And 4 local, 4 in the United States, and 4 somewhere out of the country. So that's my goal. I still want to keep my podcast going and my clients and my workshops. But that's my next big thing.
What do you think people say about you?
Depends on which people.
Let's put it in a different way. What's the nicest thing somebody could say about you?
She spreads joy. A lot of people say that. They like being around me. They like my energy. I spread joy. Make them feel good instantly when I hang out with them. So, and I make it about them. That would be the nicest. The not nicest, she's just a complete whack job.
That's kind of a compliment too, right?
Yeah, I was just like, wait a minute, I'm okay with that.
Last thing is, I mean, listen, not everyone's for everyone, right? You know, thank right. God.
Yeah, that would be it. Whack job.
Well, what's a bit of a guilty pleasure for you then? You can guilt out of it if you want, I don't mind.
I love pizza. And I don't know if it's guilty pleasure, but I love pizza.
What's your go-to in the pizza world?
Oh, I can eat any of it. I can eat pepperoni. I can eat meat lovers. I can eat veggie. I love food, all of it. And I love really good red wine.
What's your go-to in the red wine? Have you a special?
I just like dry red bold wine. So it could be Cabernet, it could be Malbec. Could be Merlot.
Something wet.
No, I like dry. I don't like sweet. And I don't like white. I would rather not have it. And I like watching. I always have one series that my husband and I watch on Netflix, like a fun, like goofy show or like break. I think we just finished Breaking Bad. So we always have one show we're watching and then we watch together, which I like. I like doing that. I don't know, they're guilty pressures, but I like doing them.
And I mean, for you, you know, leisure and pleasure outside of that, what's when you're in your downtime, what are you doing? Are you up a mountain in the sea?
Yeah, I'm up a mountain. I like the woods. So I'm going to be biking or hiking with myself, with my son, with my dog. My husband hates the outdoors. Don't take him. Or with friends. So that's what I'd be doing. Anything outside. Or I have lots of friends, so I like getting together with my friends on the deck.
Well, you get a lot of energy, right? You pick it up.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a big gardener. So I have, please rain. It hasn't rained in a while. Veggies and flowers. I spend a lot of time in my garden. A lot. Send you some tomatoes.
It's like a meditation form, is it?
Meditation, or if I'm really mad, I go out and pick weeds because we have lots of weeds. So I'll be like, my garden is not like, it's not well kept. I mean, it's not like perfect crop. No, it's like wilderness, but I do plant a lot. Like, I don't have the coiffed yard where the small flowers are in the front and the big ones in the back. It's kind of like me. It's all over the place, but I just throw bulbs in there and see what happens. Like, I plant a lot of things from seeds and bulbs and just see what comes about. It wouldn't be in home and gardens, but they're pretty and fun. Some years it works out, some years not so much.
Is this like a metaphor for your life?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. See what happens. Woo.
Took a couple of seeds in. Yes.
Well, you know, you have to nurture it and sing songs to them and love them and make sure you water them. Oh, I just thought of this. And this is amazing. So I should send you a picture. So Lancaster, Pennsylvania is near me. It's Amish country, and they have the most beautiful flowers you can get. And I go there once a year, get tons of different bulbs and seeds and whatever there. And you never know. Sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't, but it's also really affordable. Well, I also get like hanging baskets. Like maybe it would be like US $17 versus you could pay like $50 where I live, right? Well, I took these hanging baskets and then I put them, I don't hang them, I put them in pots, right? And let's just say, you know, the pot is, you know, it's like 12 or 16 inches. And I put the flower in. Then I have another huge, massive pot, and I still put the same flower in it, you know? And it looks kind of weird because it's not, this pot is massive. I forgot people, not everybody's seeing us. So it's massive. And so it's in there, but like, and you could still see the white plastic, this massive, huge, that looks like it should have like five flowers inside. And I say, you just wait. And so my son and I were sitting out on the porch. He goes, oh God, Mom, this is going to be a story. It is. Well, now that same flower that I put in, you know, the 12-inch pot, that's just looking the same, you know? It's just staying about the same, looks pretty. But this one that I put in that was just 12-inch in this massive big pot bloomed and bloomed. It's the biggest thing you've ever seen in the world. It just kept growing and growing. And I said, see, I go, this is just showing you that flower over there was the same size as this. But in that environment, it couldn't, that's all it could grow. You know, I watered it, I talked to it, but that's as much as it can grow. This one, look, it kept growing and growing and growing because it was in the right environment to expand. And that's why he goes, oh, Mom, I know the Albert Einstein, you know, how he says about if you're going to judge a fish, how he climbs a tree, he's going to think he's stupid his whole life. I said, yeah, that's exactly right. So look how this flower with the right environment just kept growing and growing and growing and growing into this huge pot. He said, maybe you should write a blog about it. And I said, I am. I'm going to take pictures to show the difference. It's the same exact size flower, you know, and it couldn't get any bigger because its roots were constrained versus this one was allowed to grow, and it's incredible. And I think, you know, when you're saying about life and me gardening, that is really what I hope I can do for others, like even just a little bit I'm with them, is that I could help them see their full potential and how truly powerful they are so that they can reach all that they want in life and not limit themselves. And with children, I think about all this time, like nurturing them to reach beyond what, you know, they feel like they can reach, and it's okay if they fail or fall forward, and that you'll be for them. Oh my God, I can't imagine. You know, how amazing it would be if every parent did that. It'd be so cool.
Just provide the biggest pot you possibly can in life for them.
Yeah, yeah. But that's true. I'm telling you, that's the way it is because they get root bound. Like they can't get any bigger. But if you put this, it just keeps growing and growing and growing. It's crazy. And it grows into it. Never know.
I think the little plant's jealous of the big plant.
You know, it probably is. It probably is jealous because it really, everyone comes to my back porch and goes, holy moly, how much did you pay for that? I'm like, $17. Where'd you get that? I'm like, no, you don't understand. It was only this big.
Tell me, I mean, if you were to try and I say, I mean that in the nicest way to put or to sort of describe what your fire in your belly is in one or two words, what would it be, Sandy?
Easy peasy. Pure joy.
Love it. It's even in the name.
Yep. Pure joy.
Well, what is the best way people can find out more about you, hunt you down, track you down, stalk you, any of the above?
Oh, they can go to, everything is Sandy Joy Weston. So they can go to my website. Everything's there, sandyjoyweston.com. But I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Same thing, Sandy Joy Weston. And Weston is with an O-N.
What other way would you put it?
A lot of people put Weston as an I-N because there's Weston hotels.
Okay.
Even to this day, my friends that know me still say Weston, I-N. No big deal, but you're not going to find me.
Oh, beautiful. What sort of message would you like to leave with our listeners and message for the world?
Be kind to yourself. The more you love yourself unconditionally, the more you'll love the world. Just remember, your birthright is to be happy. You don't have to prove anything to anybody.
Be the big plant.
Be the big plant. Be the big, be the pot for others.
You're in the world's largest plant pot.
Yeah.
Grow.
Yeah.
I love it. Danny, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your joy and spreading more of it in the world. And listen, I wish you all the best for when the talk begins. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. It was fun.
Well, that was another great episode of Fire in the Belly. You know, this really wouldn't be possible without our great guests taking the time to share their personal journeys. And boy, oh boy, sometimes it is personal. It's an absolute pleasure to have that, and then to hear the journeys that the people have been on. We've loads more episodes coming up soon, and it's always a pleasure to have guests on. If you do happen to know anyone with true fire in their belly, please reach out to us so we can share their journey, lessons, and successes. So, all that's left to say is have a great day, live with fire in your belly, and be the mightiest version of you.